south of the Mason-Dixon. This is the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. Here is your host, Brian McClanahan.
Welcome back to the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. This is your host, Brian McClanahan, and this is episode 278, covering the week of September 6th through September 10th, 2021. Glad to have you back on the program. Very glad to be here. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, like our Gab page, and subscribe to our YouTube page, where you can access all kinds of cool stuff. We have all of our previous, well, not all, but we've got most of our previous conferences available there in video form, some in audio form, but that's a great thing. Also, if you go to our webpage and you click on our mobile app, you can get that. You can download that for your phone, and that does have all of our conference lectures, anything we've recorded going back to 2002. Now, not everything is up there again. We had some of our early conferences we don't have in audio or video format, but we have a lot of good stuff there. Over 200 lectures available at abbevilleinstitute.org, also on our app. Again, free of charge. All this is free of charge to you. YouTube's free of charge. The app is free of charge. The lectures are free of charge. This is great stuff. Now, if you do want to attend something that's fun and you have to pay, these are our Zoom webinars, and we do those once a month. You do have to pay for those, and we do have a website, abbevilleacademy.org, where you can get replays of those. They're $15. It's not a lot of money, but you do get an hour or more, sometimes an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, of material that's just great stuff. You can download the audio file, which is an MP3. You can download the video file. It's yours forever. Once you pay for it, you've got it. And once you attend one of those webinars, you do get a replay out of that, too. That's yours free of charge as well. So lots of great stuff there. Get those things. Go to abbevilleacademy.org, register, free to register, right? And then you can purchase classes. If you give us an email address at abbevilleinstitute.org, we'll give you a free ebook, Exploring the Southern Tradition. Plus, you get our daily dose of Dixie Monday through Friday. It's a great way for us to keep in touch with you, let you know about things we're doing, let you get our articles from the website, which is what I cover in these podcasts. Also, share the podcast around on social media. You know, rate the podcast where you get it. Let people know you're listening to the Week in Review at the Abbeville Institute. It's a great way for people to know more about us. We do have an exciting new initiative. If you are a college undergraduate or you know a college undergraduate and you want them to get some money, right? This is awesome. We have a scholarship that's available, essay contest. It's the Douglas B. Rogers Essay Contest. We are now hosting this. This is the first time I've mentioned it. We're going to get more information out there about it. The essays are due in January, so there's a little time to put these together and write it. But this is a fantastic opportunity if you are a college undergraduate or you know a college undergraduate to go and get some money for college. So the first place prize, I think, is $2,000, which is pretty good, right? And it's the Abbeville Institute is hosting the essay contest. It's been hosted for years at a university, and the Rogers family likes the institute, and they thought that we would be a good host for it, and they wanted us to go out and start facilitating this essay contest. So we've done it, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity for young undergraduate students to think about some of these things and to enjoy getting some money. And so I would certainly go out and look at that. Go out and look at this Douglas Rogers essay contest. The prompt this year is a quote from Edmund Burke, and I think it's a really good prompt and should spark some discussion and thought. And this is a new thing we're doing. Again, we're trying to add new things all the time for the Institute. We're not just a website. We have conferences. We aren't just a podcast. We have other things we're doing. We do make these videos. If you like all these things, we do have our press. We're putting out books. So if you like that stuff and you think that it's worth your time and energy, please consider a tax deductible donation to the full extent of the law. You can click on that support tab at abbevilleinstitute.org to do that. And we are going to be making, I've listened to what people have said about the website. We changed it. There's been some positive feedback, also some things. Well, I wish it was this, this, and this. So we're working on making those changes behind the scenes. Things are happening, right? So we're always doing stuff. We're always trying to improve and make things better for you and continue pushing the Southern tradition. And of course, sad week for the South. I mean, the fact that Robert E. Lee, the great Robert E. Lee statue in Richmond, Virginia, comes down, it was inevitable. I think it was inevitable because of the nature of Virginia now. And there is this push for a new Virginia. There's old Virginia and there's new Virginia. And I think this is where we are in modern American society. Immigration, whether it's internal or external, in this case, it's primarily internal. It's people moving into Virginia from other parts of the United States because of Washington, D.C., and they forever changed Virginia. Virginia now is a blue state. And it's a blue state because of people moving into it. The same thing is happening in parts of the Carolinas, North Carolina, parts of South Carolina, Georgia, because of Atlanta. Of course, Florida always has South Florida that's different from the rest of real Florida. Alabama's got North Alabama. I mean, you see this in all these states. You see enclaves of these areas that aren't necessarily reflective of the culture of because of, quote-unquote, national industries or national government or whatever it is. That does change the culture. And this is a question, that we have. What is it about the Southern tradition that people should actually admire? Robert E. Lee was an example of the Southern tradition that people should admire as a great American. Not just a Southerner, but a great American. He was recognized that way across the United States for decades, across the world. I've told this story many times of Chinese businessmen coming over to Texas. I had somebody tell a story. They were hosting some Chinese businessmen, and all they wanted to see was the Robert E. Lee statue in Dallas. They didn't want to see where Kennedy was shot. They wanted to see the Robert E. Lee statue. Why? Because of these men, Lee represented that spirit of Americanism, that defiance. He's what made America great. Right? And he was exemplary of that tradition of maintaining the ancient constitutions of the United States. And this is one thing that I think we don't say enough of. When you look at Patrick Henry and how Patrick Henry defended independence, it was the ancient constitutions. Essentially, the king himself and the parliament were violating the Constitution, which is why they had to defend that. They weren't anti-Great Britain. They were, in fact, pro-Great Britain. You could say the Southerners, who seceded in 1860 and 61, were pro-U.S. Constitution. They were pro-America because they saw the destruction of America from the North. Now, were they right or wrong? I mean, this is something we can debate. But this is essentially how they were phrasing it. And so that Southern tradition, that Jeffersonian tradition, which is bigger than just the South. I mean, there are Jeffersonians all over the United States. Jeffersonians, I mean, Franklin Pierce was a Jeffersonian. Nathaniel Hawthorne was a Jeffersonian in many ways. James Buchanan, in many ways, was a Jeffersonian. You had these people all over the United States. Lewis Cass was a Jeffersonian. So you had these Southerners, this tradition all over the United States, and now that tradition is being destroyed. And anyone who dares go against the modern mainstream narrative of what the war was about is going to be called all kinds of names and denounced. And Ben Jones, Ben Jones for years was classic. He was a Democrat in Congress, Cooter on the Dukes of Hazzard. A man who I've even gotten emails after we published stuff that he wrote, oh, he's too far on the left for me. Ben Jones is a yellow Democrat, right? He's a conservative Democrat. This is what Ben Jones was, a conservative Democrat. The real problem with the South today is we don't have those people anymore. They're gone. The conservative Democrat is gone. Howard Dean, it wasn't so long ago that Howard Dean remarked he wanted to get the votes of the guys with the Confederate flag on their pickup truck. That's what he wanted. He wanted those votes. He couldn't say that now. Oh my gosh, what? You want racists to vote for you? Well, were those people racists? Are they just proud of being from the South? That's the Dixie flag. Why do we have this Confederate flag in our daily dose of Dixie that we send out? Well, because it's a daily dose of quote-unquote Dixie. It's the Dixie flag. It's the symbol of the South, and it has been for years. It's a beautiful design. It's the cross of St. Andrew. I mean, beautiful design. Is it any different than putting the Alabama flag out there or the Florida flag that has that design in it? The Georgia flag is still the first national Confederate flag. So we've had people say, well, use that. Use the first national. But of course, the quote-unquote battle flag was in the second national and third national Confederate flag. So it was part of the national symbol of the Confederacy, but not just that. It's been a symbol of the South. And it's been recognized in places like Africa even as a symbol of defiance to central authority. These are things we need to understand. So what we really need are liberal Southerners who just love the South. And of course, the image we used on this first that piece that Ben Jones wrote on Monday, if we don't take our stand now, it'll be too late, is now, I mean, this is archived. This is the Lee Monument before it was graffitied, before it was taken down and essentially cut to bits. It's a sad day. And Ben Jones gets into this. He says, look, I mean, this leftist stuff, it's horrible. We don't take our stand now. I would say it's probably already too late. I mean, we're probably already too far gone. What we have to try to do is hold on to what we can, hold on to much of what we can, and use things like the Institute to try to do that. He says, our challenge is greatly exacerbated by the cold hard facts. Our opponents have lesser numbers, but an almost total control of the mainstream media, the major television networks, the major American newspapers and publishing houses, and the gigantic film and entertainment corporations. The school boards of the ever-expanding woke are almost entirely committed to their personal need for a mandated re-education. He said, the creed of the Democratic Party of Jefferson and Jackson is now South bad, South racist, South needs more punishment. And this is coming from a man who ran as a Democrat. I tell this story first when I first met Ben Jones, super nice guy. Just super nice guy. I can't say enough good things about him. He's just a nice guy. His wife is super nice. Just nice people. We went out to lunch, and we went to a restaurant. There was maybe about, I don't know, six or seven of us. And a couple of people were there, and it was myself and Ben Jones and Don Livingston and then a few other people. And something was said about Jimmy Carter. And one of the guests, you know, made kind of a joke about Jimmy Carter. And I saw the look on Ben Jones' face. He didn't like that too much. He liked Jimmy Carter. And he said, well, I'll say this about Jimmy Carter. You know, he could say the right things at times. He just never communicated well. And he brought up when his library was dedicated and President Reagan came to give the speech, and he made this great speech, and it was, you know, like the clouds parted and the sun came out at that particular time, and Jimmy Carter got up, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, well, that's why he won, you know, because Reagan can make a speech. Jimmy Carter embodied the Southern gentleman. I wrote a piece about Jimmy Carter a while back, and Ben Jones wrote me, and he said Jimmy Carter was a real agrarian. He would farm some peanuts and go write a poem about it. And he was authentically Southern. He still is authentically Southern. We can disagree on politics, and Jimmy Carter is a leftist. And unfortunately, Jimmy Carter has gone along with some wokeism, some woke stuff that maybe you would just wish he wouldn't have. Because even when he was younger, he wouldn't come down hard on the Confederacy. He loved the Confederacy. There's a story out there of Jimmy Carter going to the premiere of Gods and Generals. It was Gettysburg. Jimmy Carter going to the premiere of Gettysburg, and you had Martin Sheen there as Robert E. Lee, and this guy, he said he was watching a movie, and there was this guy behind him, Southerner, kept talking about all this stuff about the war, and he was getting kind of irritated with it, so he turned around to say something, and it's Jimmy Carter. The man loved history. He loved the South. You read his book, An Hour Before Daylight, and it's all about the Southern tradition, his father, you know, the agrarian tradition. These are the old Southern Democrats that we've lost. Jimmy Carter has moved to the left as he's gotten out. And of course, he supports people like Stacey Abrams, which is awful. But this is what we have, what we had. And Ben Jones represented that. And so Ben Jones talks about his role, his participation in the civil rights movement, that we've gone way beyond that now. He says, to betray and disparage our heritage, our culture, and our families will require a cowardice reserved for the great turncoats of history. For we Southerners are trying to defend the most basic American principles of freedom. No region of our nation has given more of her sons and daughters in protecting these freedoms, best articulated during our revolution by the eloquence of Jefferson. When Patrick Henry of Virginia said, give me liberty or give me death, he meant every word of it. And so many Southerners have done that. They've laid down their lives for everybody. He says, but now has come the tsunami of self-righteous intolerance sponsored by American academia. And of course, this is left. This is Yankees, right? This is more Yankees. Wokeness, that living oxymoron, has now infected every facet of American life, from the Boy Scouts to the Pentagon and from the boardrooms to the restrooms. It is a national hysteria. The only way to stop this is by any peaceful means necessary. You must fight this cancer every day, all day long. For at its core, what is happening now is perhaps the most un-American trend since the end of Jim Crow. Simply put, as an American, I have the right to believe what I have come to believe through a lifetime of study, observations, and research. I have worked in factories, on farms, on the railroad, on movie sets in Hollywood, and I served a couple of terms in the United States Congress. I believe that a truly just society must respect differences of opinion, especially differences of opinion about our shared American journey. My opinion might not be your opinion, but if you expect me to respect your opinion and your right to hold it, then I must expect and demand the same from you. But this is not what the left wants. They want uniformity of opinion now. They are the most anti-diverse, diverse people in the United States, the illiberal liberals. I mean, this has been going on for years, but here we have it, and I think Ben Jones does a nice job explaining that. And this piece, it's coupled nicely with the piece we published on Tuesday by Boyd Cathy, The Unwanted Southern Conservatives. This is actually a chapter from the book The Vanishing Tradition, Perspectives on American Conservatism. Paul Gottfried edited it. And it's great because it gets into the Southerner in the conservative movement. That Southerner is no longer accepted or wanted in the conservative movement. No longer accepted or wanted. And I go back to my own podcast that last week I talked about Hillsdale College, which is supposed to be the conservative institution, right, in the United States. You ask a conservative, where do you send your kids? Well, I send them to Hillsdale College. And we have people that support the institute at Hillsdale and students there, and we have people like that. But when you look at the leadership of Hillsdale College, and there was a podcast in July from Hugh Hewitt and Larry Arnn, who's the president of the college. And Hugh Hewitt comes out and says Calhoun was evil. Well, if that's the case, where do you go from there? If Calhoun was evil, but Russell Kirk considered Calhoun to be an important part of American conservatism. This is where I go back and why this stuff actually matters. When you go back and look at Harry Jaffa and Mel Bradford in the debates, Mel Bradford being the conservative Southerner, Harry Jaffa, a Straussian. And Jaffa he self-identifies as conservative, and there's certain things, certain areas where we would agree. But when you make equality a conservative principle and you make Lincoln a conservative, you have undermined your entire position. Lincoln was not conservative at all. Lincoln was not conservative at all. So the right, the modern right, has adopted, though, his position on America, his position on the Declaration, his position on everything as being the American position, which is completely alien to the original American position on these things. And they'll say things like, well, I mean, we can support Madison's view of nullification, but that we can't go any further. Well, why do you get to stop? I mean, why do you get to decide where we stop? And the important thing about it is calling Calhoun evil is actually undermining American conservatism, because Calhoun had some really important things to say about majorities, about power, about constitutions, written constitutions. Calhoun was a deep thinker, and people still study Calhoun around the globe. But yet, he is a bad guy now. We can't mention Calhoun because, oh my gosh, you say something about Calhoun, well, he's just an evil guy. Same thing about Lee. I mean, it starts with Calhoun. Calhoun's easy pickings because of the positive good speech, which most people don't even know what's in that. They just say, oh, Calhoun said slavery was a positive good. Well, what did he say? What did he actually say in it? He didn't say slavery itself was a positive good. What he said was how it actually existed in the U.S. at the time was a positive good. Not the ideology of slavery, not some, you know, bigger, some broad conception of the term slavery, but as it existed at the time. And again, we can say, well, he's wrong about that. But that doesn't, that was his most, the part of his thought that was the most, it wasn't even novel. I mean, he was not even unique in that. There were other Americans saying these exact same things long before Calhoun said them. Long before Calhoun said them. But of course, those on the right will try to point to Calhoun as the progenitor of the left and identity politics and this Hegelian democracy and all this other kind of stuff. You know, this very weird attachment to Calhoun because he knew a guy who knew a guy who knew Hegel and liked Hegel. Well, there were Southerners that did, but they were on the left generally, and the liberals in the South. Calhoun was not that. So this is where, I mean, I think this piece on Southern conservatism is important. Why we still need to have a viable South in the conservative movement. If we don't, the conservative movement is dead. And I also think we need traditional Southerners on the left too. Because if we don't, the left is just so far beyond redemption. There's nothing there to temper it. This is where, look, I'll point this out. Joe Manchin of West Virginia. He's kind of he's a conservative Democrat, Southern conservative Democrat. I mean, in that way, from a Southern state. He's governor of the state at one time. These are the people that the leftists hate. The vitriol against Manchin is just tremendous because he's like, hey, look, I mean, all right, I can get on board with some of the things you're doing, but not all this stuff. I mean, some of this stuff is just kooky and crazy. He's been bribed, I mean, everything to try to get him on board with the woke leftist agenda. He just won't do it. And, I mean, this is where you have an old Southern Democrat there, and you need more of these people. You know, you need more of them. You just don't have enough of them. And that's because they know the caucus. They know if they buck the party line, if they go against Chuck Schumer or they go against Nancy Pelosi, they're going to have their life is going to be made miserable. So the leadership of the Democrats has made it almost impossible for any conservatives who might be Democrats. I know several of these people. I still know people that classify themselves as old Southern Democrats, kind of on the left, but they don't like all the other stuff. And they love the South, though. I mean, they love the South. We have supporters of the Abbeville Institute who are these people. And it's good. We need these people. In fact, we need more of these people than what we realize, because that would help keep some of these things around. You know, if you still had a Democrat governor of Virginia that was an old Southern, real Southern Democrat, Robert E. Lee would still be standing up there today because he would have said no, shut up to the petulant little children throwing a fit. But we didn't. We had somebody that abandoned what he was for political points. This is exactly why he did it. So this is cultural. It's not political. It's not Republican, Democrat. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with culture and why that culture matters. And so that's why I really like the piece by Boyd Cathy and Ben Jones this week. I thought, and then you couple that, you bookend that with a piece on Friday by Jason Morgan against the cruise ship historians, where he takes to task some of these historians, and he's pointing out members of the establishment historian group, Conservative Inc., which, of course, is also a problem, where these people won't really take principled stands on things because they want to go on the cruises. They want to be invited to the dinners. They want to do these things. They want big deals. They want six-figure or seven-figure book deals. This is what they want. Doesn't mean they're going to get it, but this is what they want. They want to be accepted. They want to be accepted by the people they hate. That's the real problem with all of this. They want to be accepted by people they hate. And when you're in that world and you just want recognition, you want people to accept who you are, and even if they hate you, that becomes problematic in actually being able to do anything and work to say things you really believe. I'll never forget, you know, every now and then I would tune in to Rush Limbaugh here and there. And one thing that he said that always stuck with me years ago, and he said it several times, I'm sure, but he said, you know, when he was younger, he had people tell him, I hope you make enough money to where you can say what you want. That you didn't have to say what people wanted you to say. And that didn't mean Rush was ever that way. I mean, I think Rush would toe the line of the Republican Party at times. But I think at the end, he was kind of pushing away from that. But that always, you know, to be able to say what you want without having repercussions because nobody really owns you. You got to be able to say what you want. You got to be able to say things that aren't always popular. And I say that because even at the Institute, we do this at times. We put things out. You know, Ben Jones is not always going to be accepted by people who are supportive of the Institute. Or the piece we put out on Thursday from Jack Marquardt, one of our resident scholars in Japan, The Journey from Canaan to Carolina. I've gotten some feedback on this that's fairly, some people haven't liked the piece. Some of this is because of theological differences, and okay, but again, the core of this piece, the reason Jack sent this to me is that there's actually being a video put together by Michael Givens, a film, Michael Givens, on Southern Jews. And I mean, this is an important part of the story of the South. These people were just as Confederate as anybody else. And are we not to recognize that? We may have differences with them or differences in their, whatever it is. If you don't agree with, if you're not Jewish, and maybe you have differences with these people. But, you know, the fact is, they were as Confederate as anyone else. Just as Ben Jones, an old Democrat, is just as Confederate as Emmy Bradford. And their admiration for their ancestors, right? They're just as Southern. Ben Jones is just as Southern as Emmy Bradford. These Southern Jews are just as Southern as any Southern Christian. They're Southern. And I think this is something we have to understand. Southern wasn't just one group of people and one belief system. There was a lot to it in the South. And that Jeffersonian tradition was certainly important to a lot of people in the South. Not just one group of people or one section of people, but a lot of people. And that's why that's why we published this piece, because it was an important discussion of a number of Jewish Southerners who were dedicated to the South, dedicated to the Confederacy ultimately, dedicated to the South. And I always, you know, Michael Kogan, gives a great speech. He's pro-South. He's a Jewish American, pro-South. And he talks about the Confederate flag, the battle flag they have in their family with the blood of their ancestors on it. That's powerful. Their ancestors' blood is on that flag. How many Southerners can say they have an artifact like that? That those people, his ancestors actually bled. Their blood is on the flag. That's powerful. That's really powerful. More powerful than anything. Any type of, you know, well, I've got these ancestors. Or, I mean, he's got an artifact that has that on there. I know a lot of people do. So, but the point is, and there's Southerners that do have these kind of artifacts, and they have a real tangible connection to that. And that's great. That's what we need. But Kogan is just as Southern as anybody else. And this is why I think we need to do things like this, because it helps show that the South and all its complexities was dedicated to and it wasn't slavery or race. It was dedicated to this Jeffersonian America. The South was American. The music, we had a great piece again. Tom Daniel continuing his series on Southern music this week. It was Bill Monroe and bluegrass. I mean, bluegrass, purely Southern thing. And I love Bill Monroe. Bill Monroe is great. But these are the things, you know, we can sing the songs, we can have the literature, we can do all this stuff. And we may not agree with all these people and everything they do and everything they say, but they're still Southern. These Southern Jews were still Southern. Ben Jones, longtime Democrat, still Southern. Jimmy Carter, Southern. Emmy Bradford, Southern. Richard Weaver, Southern. The Agrarians were Southern. Wendell Berry, Southern. We may not always agree with everything all these people do, but they're Southern, and they have that to it. And what we need to recognize is that you need to be constantly, as Ben Jones points out, fighting the fight here. Even if you don't... Look, nobody's saying if you support your Confederate ancestors, you support slavery or Jim Crow or anything like that. Nobody's saying that. You support these people because they articulated a purely American Jeffersonian position of self-determination and self-government. That's what it was about for most of the people going off to war. That's what it was about. So anyways, I thought we had some really great pieces this week some really good stuff this week. And I hope you went out and read it. Take a look at that Douglas Rogers essay contest, because if you're an undergraduate or you know an undergraduate and they want some money out of it, it's on our main page. Just go to abbeyvalinstitute.org. It's right in the middle of the page. Click on that. Information there is on the contest, who Doug Rogers was and his family. Very nice little page. And the essay, it's a great opportunity. Even the third place winner gets $500. So it's $2,000, $1,000, and $500. So there's $3,500 out there, total money, for scholarships. So even if you came in second, $1,000. Who couldn't use $1,000 as a college student to help them out? Books, living expenses, whatever it is, you get the check and it's yours. And, $500 even. That sometimes will pay for your books, or at least a couple of books for your semester. So that's good. I mean, these are things that you've got to help you out for the semester. So until next time, good day.